Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right. Welcome to Friday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline Studio as we wind up the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Friday afternoon. Andrea Haines is in the studio from the Chicago Tribune. She comes by to talk about what's new in tech and innovation in Chicago. Andrea, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
Okay. So, you know, it's like I know I'm sort of swimming against or upstream against the current, whatever your phrase. The Consumer Electronics Show is going on, and we've talked about it a little bit, but and that would be a good topic for us, but I just get bored with some stuff that everyone's talking about, so I don't want to do that.
Did you see the giant bread maker, though?
No, there's a giant bread maker?
There's always some crazy stuff, right? That's just even fun to look at visually.
Well, I saw the Amazon toilet. I saw that story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What's so the giant bread maker?
The bread maker is like a giant sort of commercial-style bread maker. It's like the version you'd have on your countertop, but it makes, I don't know, 20 or 30 loaves at a time. It's just visually, it's pretty cool looking. It looks like a giant bread vending machine.
I should get that so that I could fail at making 30 loaves at a time, just like I do with the single loaf bread maker. I'm never good at that.
Yeah.
What I do want to talk about is this Civica RX, and Advocate Aurora Health has signed on to this now. This could change the way, maybe not the way we buy our prescription drugs at the Walgreens or CVS, but at least the way the hospitals buy their drugs, right? Explain this for me.
Exactly. So this is not for consumers at the moment, but it would impact you as hospital patients, where we all know the drugs have somewhat insane prices
attached
to them.
Get the bill, right, right.
Yeah, you get a bill and you're like, oh, the Tylenol was however many dollars. So Advocate Aurora, which operates 27 hospitals in Illinois and Wisconsin, so it's a large hospital group, has joined this company, which is called Civica RX. It's a not-for-profit generic drug company.
So it's a bunch of hospitals, right?
Exactly.
Formed
it's
a
like
coalition.
Sort of a coalition exactly of hospitals, and they're it's giving them some more control over the drugs that they dispense.
You know, it's funny. We're going to talk later in the program about Costco and how they're starting to raise their own chickens to get away from the chicken monopoly. And in a way, that's what these hospitals are doing, right? They are trying to impact the cost of drugs by, now they're forming a coalition. Is this for purchasing power? Or they might actually be making drugs, right?
Yeah, it's actually about making them. And I think part of it is for the cost aspect, but it's also the supply aspect. You know, sometimes things, you can't get them when you need them. Certain things aren't being manufactured the way they want to dispense them or prescribe them. So it gives them a little independence there too.
So I know they've gone to the FDA to ask to get approval to become manufacturing. So that will be coming eventually. But are people seeing this an impact on their hospital bills then if they're paying less for drugs, or is this something just for the hospitals?
Yeah, it should be a more sort of more reliable pipeline of generic drugs, so it should ultimately do that.
Okay, and this in these drugs will Civica ever start selling prescriptions at the corner store?
I think they aim to. You know, that seems to be down the line, but something that they would like to do so that, again, it perhaps creates another pipeline for some of these generics. And generics are hugely popular.
Right.
A large percentage of the drugs that we all get, regardless of exactly the brand you're prescribed, a lot of times we wind up with generics.
All right. It's Civica RX is the company, and Advocate Aurora Health has signed on. I know there are some others in the Chicago area that have signed on are part of it, too, this coalition to help fight. And, you know, it would be great if it works, and it could change, really, the cost of drugs for a lot of us.
Yeah, it's possibly an innovative solution.
All right, you have a story, too, about Samsung phone users and the Facebook app, which is fascinating to me. The Facebook has a deal with Samsung so that if you buy a phone, you cannot delete. Now, this happens with the iPhone. There's a lot of iPhone apps that you cannot delete, but they're mostly Apple apps. Here, Facebook has a deal with Samsung where if you don't want Facebook, you can't delete it from your phone?
Yeah, some users were finding exactly that. You know, the delete Facebook movement has been big. People have been wanting to remove it. They're concerned about Facebook tracking their movements and all kinds of things.
Right.
And so some of these Samsung users were finding that they were not allowed to delete the Facebook app. And it's true, they really weren't because of a deal between Samsung and Facebook.
And so if you want to be, but if you're not a Facebook user, then if you just, it's just on your phone. Is it still tracking you if you're not a user?
Yeah, I mean, that's what people are worried about. It doesn't collect data or send information back to Facebook, according to Facebook.
Right, right.
Like, you know, I feel like at this point we have to say, like, we don't know, because, you know, Facebook says it's not. Sometimes that turns out to be true. Sometimes it doesn't.
You can disable it.
There are these pre-install deals that right. will sometimes show up. Apple's actually not doing this one, just FYI, for the Apple users. This one was not affecting them this time around.
It reminds me of the story earlier that Motorola bought that company that takes pictures of license plates, right? And police, like police cameras use it. And so they're always taking, are they taking pictures of cars all the time, license plates?
Yeah. So that was a fascinating one, right? Like, I mean, you think about missing people, like we've had this big story in Chicago today, but like for things like Amber Alerts, this would speed up license plate recognition. But yes, privacy concerns, you know, run amok there too.
So the cars, and it's on some commercial vehicles too, I think, but like police cars have this, and
exactly.
some in the suburbs are part of the company. And so they're just always taking pictures of people's license plates.
Yeah, it's some pretty major tracking.
Right. And
yeah.
That's so that I can understand would be a little concern of people.
Yep.
All right. Read more about that in the Chicago Tribune. Andrea, go out. Have a great weekend.
I will. You too.
And we'll see you in a week or so.
Sounds good.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. Tom Gibson, is it Tom Gimble? It's in the studio.
Gibson.
I almost said, because I have such a hard time with LaSalle. I almost said Tom LaSalle.
Wow. It's better than Tom Gibson, I think.
Who is Tom Gibson, do you know?
I don't.
Gimble's in the studio, and I was thrown because he was just preparing some marketing material there while we were talking.
We're trying.
Okay, I'm so glad you're here, because...
Thank you.
I was just, well, I'm always glad when you're here. But I was reading before I came into the show, the stock market, the major indices are off to their fastest start since, I think it was, Eric, I don't know if you have the story.
2006.
Since 2006, January 1st to today.
I didn't see that.
Now, obviously, that follows a pretty rough December.
Right.
But sometimes we are so afraid of this impending downturn that people have stopped spending their money, or they're fearful. And so you did a survey of the bosses. You do it every year, right?
Yep.
I think this is the fourth year you did it.
Yep.
And last year was rosy. This year's rosier.
It's great. You know, you and I were talking about it off air, but people are so, it's like they want it to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? That we keep talking about, that it's got to end. The bull market's got to end.
Well, and I think that I mean, I'm no business guy, but I mean, I think that
if you talk yourself into being scared all the time,
right.
you're going to be scared all the time, and eventually something bad will happen.
Right.
And right now we're seeing it's a great labor market. And even though the stock market had a terrible December, companies still had record profits. Companies were still making money. And what we're seeing is it's a different economy than the world's ever seen. And that's technology based.
Right. Okay.
Coming out of you know, when things went terrible in 2009, it was because of the mortgage backed loans, right?
Sure.
And in 2002, it was because of the dot-com bubble that we didn't know that technology. Now the economy's good and we understand the technology that exists, right? This is a real economy. It's going to last a little bit longer than a traditional bull market. That's okay.
So you looked at the bosses and they say, what, 3 out of 4?
Yep, 74% of respondents plan to add headcount next year.
And that is better than the year before.
Yeah, it was 65% last year and 50% in 2017. So it's like finally people are starting to say, yeah, we're going to add people.
Right. And not only that, they're going to start, well, I don't know, 61% say they're going to increase wages.
Yeah.
How does that rank? I mean, that doesn't seem like, I'd like to see that number bigger, Tom.
Well, I don't know. We didn't include WGN. I don't know.
Trust me, I've got no payroll.
I don't know what they're offering.
I mean, I suppose that's not much over 50%.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's one
it's
of those,
not 40.
No, it's not 10. It's not 5. If things are bad, when things get really bad, people are lucky to have jobs and wages are flat. Right? 60% of companies say, we're going to pay our people more. 40% say, you know, they stated was, we're not committing to saying we're going to pay our people more.
Right.
If they have a great year, people make more money.
The other thing, though, in this, there's a number, 48% say they're having it difficult or very difficult to meet compensation requirements. So what does that mean? Because we kept talking about when the job market tightens, there's going to be more demand for pay increases. Is that what we're talking about
here? Yeah. So almost half of the people said that half of the companies, hiring managers, CFOs, HR, that it's hard to get the money for the talent we want to get.
Okay.
Right? So what they have to do is they're going to add more people, so they're probably going to lower the levels of positions they're going to hire. Right? If I want to hire a senior sales manager, right?
Okay.
But they're so expensive right now because Facebook will pay a gazillion dollars, right? And I'm a small to mid-market company. I'm going to hire somebody more junior on the totem pole and let them grow into the role.
So who's benefiting most from this? Is it the young workers coming out of college? Not the guys my age.
Correct.
Yeah. I'm doomed? Am I doomed?
You've been doomed for years.
It's said.
No, you know, I think that...
You've been telling me I'm doomed for years.
You know what? If you're good and you're working hard, you're really good in this economy.
Yeah.
Right? Eventually what will happen is, I think we'll see it, we're going to be good for about another 12 to 18 months.
And they're still saying, though, that one of the biggest challenges is finding skilled workers.
Yes. Oh, there's definitely a skills gap, because there's roles that we know exist. Unlike 2001, we know we need data analytics for marketing, for finance, for HR. There just aren't people that have been trained in that yet.
Right.
So you've got to hire young, and you've got to have them. It's almost like an apprenticeship type program.
So is it the sort of thing that these are new roles, so
yes,
the old dogs aren't necessarily equipped to
That's
do
exactly
it?
That's exactly right. You take some, I mean, and this is, it's not age discrimination. It's really not age discrimination.
It's a skills gap.
It's a skills gap. Somebody who's 55 years old and hasn't been exposed to data analytics of technology doesn't have the skill.
You know, people ask me if all the time, you know, why don't you teach? Why don't you go teach? And I don't know that I'm equipped to teach journalism or broadcasting. The way it is today. It just has changed so much.
Well, if somebody was going to go in and teach marketing, graphic design with a pen and a paper right, versus computers, it's the exact same thing.
That's Tom LaSalle, who is a good friend of Tom Gimbel, the CEO and creator of LaSalle Network. Thanks for coming by.
Always good to see you. Happy New Year.
All right. Happy New Year to you. Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. It's 12:36, and in the studio now is Aaron Guthrie, who is the governor-elect's nominee to become the director of the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. Aaron, with all those words, there's not much else room on your card, is there?
That's right. Actually, we like to call it DCEO for short.
Is this a Senate-confirmed position?
Correct.
So you still have to go through the confirmation.
Yes, correct.
Feeling pretty good about that?
Yeah.
Big problem. All right, so what's the job? This is a big job, right?
Yeah, it's a big job. So it ranges, you know, some of the charge is going to be anything as big as negotiating sort of the next big company to come be headquartered here in the state of Illinois, all the way to helping provide economic opportunities such as workforce development or even housing and heating grants for folks that are low income.
And you come from Uber most recently.
Yes, I was at Uber most recently.
So does the choice of you, someone from a sort of a, not a startup, but a disrupting technology, does that signal something when it comes to Pritzker's priorities?
You know, I think Governor-elect Pritzker is really focused on innovation and technology, and that will definitely be something that he's looking at. And, you know, when we spoke, he was very excited about my background in tech, and, you know, it's something I plan to focus on as well.
You don't have government experience.
Correct.
Is that going to be a problem, or maybe it's an asset?
You know, I think there's an opportunity to really reinvigorate Springfield with, you know, fresh set of eyes and fresh perspective, and then work with the folks that are there who know policy and government really well and round out a team that way.
And so your job, like you said, is to maybe bring in the next big company. That's part of the job. There are a lot of people say Illinois is a tough sell. How are you going to sell Illinois?
Well, I think Illinois actually isn't a tough sell. I think it's a place where we have top universities, really educated workforce. A lot of Fortune 500 companies are already based here and moving here. So I actually don't think it's a hard sell, and I think our governor-elect is really focused on being the chief marketing officer, and I plan to support him in that.
How much of your role or your focus, I guess, will be bringing from the outside in or inside up, you know, bringing companies in to invest in Illinois, or rather boosting companies that are already here or boosting new entrepreneurs here in Illinois?
It's going to be a little bit of both for sure. I need to kind of get my arms around what are the priorities first, but definitely boosting those that are here, encouraging them to keep the footprint and encourage them to stay, and also celebrate those upstart businesses and help make sure that they have the resources they need to grow and continue to stay in Illinois. In the
what can
term.
We do to take jobs from Wisconsin? Because I'm really tired of Wisconsin talking about taking jobs from Illinois. Anything I can do to help you there?
I'll let you know. I think it's really about celebrating what we have in Illinois and not sort of disparaging the state, but actually celebrating the talent and the growth opportunities we
but
have here.
It is interesting what's going on up there with Foxconn. You know, they're all about that. And I was talking to officials from Lake County last year, and they think this will be a real boon for northern Illinois, you know, that they're going to need workers, skilled workers. I suppose that doesn't really fall under your umbrella in a way. It's nice that Illinoisans are going to have nice jobs, but that's not really helping when it comes to creating or building business in this state.
Well, we can support it in the fact that we can partner with universities to create vocational programs or training programs that help people get jobs, not just like the ones in Wisconsin, but also here in Illinois that are manufacturing jobs. And so once you have that pool of really highly trained workforce that you can deploy at other companies, that starts to become really attractive for other companies.
I was talking to Tom Gimble here from LaSalle Network right before you came in. Maybe you heard some of it, and about the skills gap, or the fact that, you know, the bosses want to hire,
right,
but they don't have workers who are skilled in whether it's manufacturing or other skills to do the job. Do you work with the schools for that, or how do you solve that problem?
It's a little bit of the schools, and I think it's also with businesses. So getting businesses to commit to things like training people on coding and offering apprenticeships, and, you know, there's a lot of different models that you can look at there.
You oversee the film office?
Correct.
So will you be, like, in the background of any movies coming up?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Is that a goal of yours?
That'd be really cool.
I feel like the film business, I guess I'm wrong. I was going to say it was really big for a while and isn't so much. But what I'm thinking of were outside films coming in. We've got a really booming television production facility not too far from here, CineSpace.
Right.
Alex
right.
comes in from time to time. So how big of industry is that in Illinois, and what do you hope to do with that?
I think, you know, again, coming back to the point around celebrating and being sort of the support of the chief marketing officer of Illinois, I think we want to attract all sorts of businesses, including film. And so it's going to be a priority for sure.
So you start your job on Tuesday?
Officially, I start a week from Tuesday.
Okay.
But I'll be ramping up really quickly and going to the inauguration, celebrating the incoming administration.
And so what do you expect to be your greatest joy out of doing this? What's drawing you to this?
Oh, great question. I was really, first of all, inspired by Governor-elect Pritzker's vision for reinvigorating the state and bringing economic growth. And, you know, obviously I talked about my background in tech, and that overlap is exciting. But when I think about just like the magnitude of impact that this office can create, and especially creating jobs for folks and helping them get access to funds to start their own business or learn a new skill, that's amazing, right? I think looking back in a few years and being able to point to that will be exciting.
Aaron Guthrie has a week left, and then it's Government Work, the director of Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Good luck.
Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. All right, here's one for all of you going out for a drink or two later this weekend. Experience the startup world firsthand by checking out a bar that works with Second Kitchen. It's simple. An establishment that doesn't have a kitchen partners up with a food business that is less than 5 minutes away, and you can order to have that food delivered to you. It may seem simple, but someone's got to give the tamale guy a run for his money. So support your local business and enjoy a drink while you're at it. But if you want to try something a bit healthier, like an alternative sports drink, that's what Coco 5 is for. And they're getting a new CEO, the old chief marketing officer from MillerCoors. There have been a number of alternative health drinks out there, but this one's been around since 2009. It's a big pickup for the coconut beverage company, since their goal is to expand to the national market. Man, just pause for a second and take it all in. Appreciate all the good business opportunity that comes from Chicago. We've got it all. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank, and we thank them for that. All right, so I'm going to give you more information than you need, but I love the rotisserie chicken. I usually buy one or two a week. I carve it up, and that's kind of my lunch through much of the week, is carved up chicken served in one way or another. I bring it in here to eat right after the show every day. And Costco is known for a lot of things, but they're certainly known for their $4.99 rotisserie chicken. They sell millions of them. In fact, 78 million, I think, last year was the number. And they're going into their own production business because of the near monopoly when it comes to chicken production in this country. I read about that in an article in a journal called Civil Eats. The article was by Twilight Greenaway, and she joins us on a phone line now. Twilight, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You know, I really enjoyed the piece you wrote. It was a lengthy piece in looking at several different angles about the impact on farmers and all of that. But let's just start generally. Why is it that Costco wants to grow its own chickens?
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, they are a very popular item. They're really key to the business model. They're a loss leader, So consumers come in, they buy a chicken for their dinner, like you say.
They buy a chicken, and then they go home with 48 rolls of toilet paper.
Exactly, right. On the way back to the register, they stock up on $100 worth of other things.
Right.
So it's been a successful model for them, and they haven't profited from it in a while. But they decided they wanted to branch out into the chicken farming business. And so they've moved into Nebraska, and they're working with farmers. They've gotten a few farmers to sign up already, and they're looking to find 125 farmers who want to put in these barns.
And so the farmers will grow the chickens for Costco that Costco will then slaughter and produce?
Exactly. Okay. So Costco has built or is building a really large processing facility in Fremont, Nebraska. That was actually pretty controversial when they were talking about putting it in. And the farmers, they're essentially independent farmers, but the way that works in the chicken industry is that they're contract farmers. And so Costco owns the birds, Costco does all the processing, Costco brings in the feed and ships out the birds several times a year. So the farmers, you know, they're not your traditional old school farmer in a lot of ways.
Right.
They're running this very industrialized system.
And right now it's what Tyson and Pilgrim's Pride pretty much. If you eat a chicken, that's where it comes from.
And Purdue as well.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Those are really the three biggest companies that control the marketplace.
And so Costco's
Tyson
getting into it to control,
biggest.
I'm sorry, Costco's getting into it to control the price or to control the supply, right? This facility they're building in Nebraska is going to produce 100 million chickens a year?
It's absolutely the supply, and some experts believe it's the price as well, that it will help them control the price.
And so with these farmers, to these contract farmers, a lot of them, from what I read, and as you said, they're still rounding them up or recruiting them, I guess, but a lot of them are not defecting from the other big companies. They're going into the chicken business for the first time, correct?
Right. So there hasn't been this type of large-scale chicken production in Nebraska in recent history. One of the reasons for that was there was an interesting, unusual law on the books that lasted. There were laws on the books in other states as well that were preventing corporate farming like this from taking place, but it lasted in Nebraska longer. And so that was just rolled back in 2016. And the state has really been courting the livestock industry in the last few years.
So the state wants this business. Do the local farmers want it so much?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
Some are really ready to sign on because, as you know, the price of corn and soy.
It's been very low.
In particular, yeah, it's been dismal. So that's what's grown in Nebraska for the most part. And there are pockets of other livestock production. There's a feedlot industry there, but chicken hasn't been a major industry there. And so the farmers...
I'm sorry, go ahead, Twilight. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I was just saying, so the farmers don't have a neighbor to turn to say, what was this like for you?
Ah, right.
So I think that's a big piece of what's happening now is that some of the farmers in the area actually oppose it and are looking to what's happened in places like North Carolina and other parts of the South in particular, where contract chicken farmers have really struggled and have often ended up in a lot of debt.
So if they're a contract farmer, are they guaranteed an annual salary, an annual paycheck, or they still are at the whim of their production?
You know, Costco's trying to do it a little bit differently. There's something called a tournament system where they essentially rank the quality of the birds you produce, and so the people who have the best quality get paid above a certain amount, and the people who have the worst quality get paid below that. So the farmers compete against one another, and that's the traditional model. But Costco says they're doing away with the tournament system, and they do have a baseline price that they're setting in this contract they're having farmers sign now.
Uh-huh.
One of the questions that the farmers union and other folks are raising is, it's a 15-year contract, so if they're setting a price now, what will that look like in 15 years when the prices of everything else have gone up?
Right, right. Twilight Greenaway writes for the journal Civil Eats. She's an editor there. Twilight, it was great to talk to you. I hope we can talk again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Steve.